Happy Easter. That's a greeting that's easy to say on the street on a morning like this, but the same words can be challenging in a Unitarian Universalist congregation. What does Easter mean for as theologically diverse a community as ours? In many UU churches, today it's a celebration of spring, and certainly Easter is that. Flowers are breaking through whatever is left of winter. I keep urging our Easter lilies to burst open any second now. Anyway, at my home, the crocus emerged 2 weeks ago. The daffodils are blooming now. And green leaves of hyacinth and tulips are emerging. And as they do, my heart is filled with hope and joy. Easter is a celebration of spring. No doubt about that. In some UU congregations, we'll link Easter to all the spring religious festivals. You know what? Is there somebody over there that can just turn the master down a tiny bit on the... because I think it's ringing a lot. I'm hearing a lot of ringing. In some UU congregations, we'll link Easter to all the spring religious festivals, to the northern goddess Ustra or Ostara, and the fertility rituals around the vernal equinox, when bunnies, the nocturnal animals which represent the moon and the fertile and the divine female, lay eggs, which represent the sun and the male and the seed. We'll tell the Greek story of Coda, the maiden daughter of grandmother Demeter, Cora stolen by her uncle Hades to the world of the departed spirits to become Persephone, no longer a maiden. She is permitted each spring to return to her mother's world, to the earth, and to us. We'll tell of Isis lovingly putting the broken parts of Osiris together as he lay on the riverbank. Mother Nile returns, bringing nourishment to the great fields of grain. Osiris brought back to life. Babylonian Ishtar rescues Tamar from the underworld. Phoenicians tell a similar story of Adonis and Aphrodite. And some of you churches will tell stories this morning about spring cleaning, about feeling the warm sunshine, about getting the winter's confinements out so that our bodies and minds might again be set free. Easter, we say, is about renewal and liberation, rescue and revivification. But I say, believe it or not, Easter is also about our friend Jesus. Jesus, we have long called our leader. Believe it or not, it's written right there on the wall. You can see it. Easter is about the aftermath of Jesus' experience of being put to death by the state. Easter is about capital punishment. This session of the Maryland General Assembly has been about capital punishment. Our senators and delegates have outlawed capital punishment in Maryland. And our governor gave this issue his highest attention, and he will soon sign the bill into law. From one perspective, now the matter is settled. Capital punishment has been replaced with life imprisonment without parole. We needn't bother talking about it anymore, right? But I imagine that we have yet something to say about the death penalty. I imagine we will have an extended conversation among the citizenry of Maryland in the next 18 months as supporters of the death penalty organize to take this law, this repeal, to popular referendum as they have sworn to do. In Maryland, a recent Washington Post poll reports that about 60% think that we should indeed have some form of death penalty. The poll shares some expected data that men tend to be stronger supporters of the death penalty than women, that white people tend to be more supportive than people of color, that Republicans, by a very slim differential, tend to be more in favor of capital punishment than Democrats. But overall, even in as Democratic Party-dominated a state as ours, fewer than 50% of the people think that the death penalty should be abolished, that capital punishment should be replaced by life in prison. As a matter of fact, many people think that the law of 3 years ago that limited the death penalty to those with a positive DNA identification with a videotaped confession or video footage that proves the guilt of the person committing a heinous crime makes the death penalty in Maryland flawless. With such evidence, they say, the state will never make a mistake. And yet every day the Innocence Project identifies new cases of people sitting on death row where verdicts were proved by current forensic standards to be wrong. Most infamous in Maryland was the case of Kirk Bloodsworth, who was convicted in 1985. He spent 8 years in prison, two of which on death row, before being exonerated just 20 years ago. Eyewitnesses misidentified Bloodsworth, the government misconducted its case, and ultimately it was more modern DNA testing that disproved his involvement in sexual assault, rape, and first-degree murder. Bloodsworth was the first person exonerated from death row due to post-conviction DNA testing. He was released from prison and later pardoned. Many argue that our current law provides a much higher evidentiary standard, so no innocent person will be sentenced to death according to this theory. Yet what this law does is to make the available evidence the most important thing in a case. Once upon a time, the nature of the crime was what was determined whether or not someone faced the death penalty. But now, it's the question of the quality of the evidence, not the severity of the crime, that decides who goes toward death row. If the factor that leads to death penalty is not the crime but the available evidence, DNA, video recording, etc., then the application of the sentence of death becomes frivolous. Many death penalty opponents already argue that capital punishment is not applied evenly, that people of color, and especially people of color who commit crimes against white people, are far more likely to face the death penalty. The law, as it has stood in Maryland for the past 3 years, has not addressed that concern. Instead, it has added a new set of inequalities. Who's got what evidence? Now, some argue if you take a life, why should you be allowed to keep your own life? This is just simply not consistent with how we attempt to find justice under law. If, for example, you are an arsonist, the state does not burn down your house. If you are a belligerent, the state does not beat you up. If, forgive me, you are a rapist, the state does not rape you. Our system seeks to find justice by depriving you not of your life, but of your freedom. Liberty is a high value in our culture, and depriving someone of their liberty is a high penalty for the commission of crimes against people, against property, against the state. For these reasons, I stand in support of the law passed by our legislature on March 15th. And I guess I have to share Sister Holly Neer's sentiment when she asked the question, why do we kill people who are killing people to show that killing people is wrong? What a foolish notion that war is called devotion, when the greatest warriors are the ones who stand for peace. I believe that this is consistent with my own sense of worth and dignity, my sense of the worth and dignity of each person, the offended, the offender, the victim, the executioner. It's an article of faith that I believe that we are called to see the inherent worth and dignity in each. And I personally have signed a statement that if someone were to take my life, I would not want the state to take the offender's life. The story we tell on our Easter includes this beautiful picture that stands before us each week. Look at that. It's a story of invitation, a welcoming chalice in the center of a welcoming table. All are welcome, even in this icon. Those who are confused, I see them. Those who are indifferent. Those who are excited. Those who will betray. Those who will participate in the death of the teacher. The one who will offer up the teacher to be handed over to the state for execution. Now, the Jesus execution story itself is riddled with challenge. Was the trial fair? Could it have been? The story is told of a mute defendant, a silent Jesus arrested and dragged to trial, railroaded by a complicated court system, a religious court making one finding, an imperial court asked to carry out the execution. Even a frivolous application of the death sentence is there. It's already there in the story. Governor Pontius Pilate asks the crowd, "Who shall I kill? Who shall I release?" And interestingly, there are two people offered. There's the Jesus, who calls himself the Son of Humanity. And then the other question is, shall we kill Jesus Bar Abbas, Jesus, Son of the Father? The crowd says, set the Son of the Father free. Set the Son of the Father free. Kill the Son of Humanity. It's a frivolous decision. It could have gone either way. This capital punishment in this story, it could have gone either way. This story, connected to that mosaic, says it was the Son of the Father who was released and the Son of Humanity who was put to death. In 1919, in the United States, in the wake of World War I, in the midst of severe economic recession, and especially after the consolidation of the Russian Revolution, immigrants in the United States with radical political views began to be rounded up in cities of the United States to be deported to other countries that would take them. This wave of anti-immigrant hysteria was headed by Attorney General Alexander Mitchell Palmer with his rising special assistant, J. Edgar Hoover. President Woodrow Wilson, who sang in the choir of this church when he was a student at Johns Hopkins, said that immigrants, quote, had poured poison into the very arteries of our national life. Such creatures of passion, disloyalty, and anarchy must be crushed out, unquote. In South Braintree, Massachusetts, a robbery occurred on a payday at Slater Morrill Shoe Factory. A payroll clerk was killed. The police quickly settled on two Italian activists, Bartolomeo Vanzetti and Nicola Sacco. When they were taken in for questioning, they were evasive, fearful in the anti-immigrant political climate, and halting in their use of English. Anarchist and union literature was found in their homes and the car they were using to visit work sites to agitate. And they were quickly identified as the prime suspects. The Sacco and Vanzetti Defense Committee included Gertrude Winslow, a founder of the Community Church, an early Universalist and Unitarian congregation. Guided by their social vision, Mrs. Winslow and her co-religionists raised funds for Sacco and Vanzetti's defense, translated their letters, wrote their own opinionated letters to the editor, and gave English lessons to the men in prison and to their community outside. When the trial ended in convictions for first-degree murder, Mrs. Winslow sought grounds for appeal and later clemency. After Sacco and Vanzetti were executed on a newly constructed electric chair, the pride of Massachusetts, as 20,000 people gathered on Boston Common to hold vigil and protest, and then after more than 10,000 people marched in a funeral cortege that took 2 hours to pass, Mrs. Winslow and her committee began to raise questions, not only about the trial, but about the judicial system in Massachusetts and the death penalty itself. 4 months after the executions, a judicial commission charged with examining the case questioned Judge Webster Thayer's refusal to grant a new trial and recommended a change to practice that the Supreme Judicial Court might be given the authority to demand a retrial over the objection of a lower court. They questioned a number of judicial and police actions and expressed doubt that Sacco and Vanzetti should ever have been executed. Mrs. Winslow mounted a broad campaign to do away with the death penalty in Massachusetts. This campaign energized a generation of activists and began a movement that has led to the repeal of the death penalty in Massachusetts and now in 17 other states, and now for the first time south of the Mason-Dixon line in Maryland, the Free State. It feels like something hopeful. It feels like a resurrection. It feels like a possibility for the human family. Easter, in my mind, is about hope. Hope that in spite of the many challenges we human beings encounter, hope that in spite of the many mistakes our human systems engender, we humans have the capacity to change things. We have the capacity to hold the vision of a beloved community which will inspire lives of hope. Corrective action beyond mistakes, richer knowing beyond misunderstanding, cooperation beyond mistrust, maybe even life beyond death. Easter is about hope. What we learn from many instances of capital punishment can inspire us to be a different people and to do it another way. And then, maybe even as diverse a place like this, I can say, Happy Easter. Happy Easter, and fully mean it. Blessed be.